The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live in two locations this morning as Ira's inside the Emden Studios over at Ann Arbor Radio. I, meanwhile, am in the web studio in my home office, broadcasting from home like I have been for the last 2.5 months. And, you know, this time has really allowed us to catch up with some great friends of the show, really get insight into what's going on in the world around us. It's affecting every aspect of life. Conversations with the great doctors over at the University of Michigan. You know, conversations with public health officials down in Lucas County. I mean, we are getting great insight. Our next guest can offer us some great perspective, both on the coronavirus, both on the also on the civil unrest and the reaction to the killing of George Floyd last week. He is a reporter for NBC DC. He is an Emmy Award winner. He is a proud Michigan alum, also an alum of St. John's College High School, also the school that Quentin Johnson hails from. He is the only guy that I've ever seen do an interview in a hot tub. His name is Shabari Stone. Shabari, how you doing, man?
Good morning. It's an honor to be on your show, man. I tell you, I listen to you all the time so I can get the latest information on the Wolverines. And I talked to Quentin about that, and he loves your show as well. He's actually now with my son, and they're at a social distance, and, you know, they're doing their DB training and getting ready. My son plays for St. John's as going into his junior year, Go Blue. And, you know, Quentin is his mentor, and they're right now training as we speak. So to all the Wolverines, he will be ready. This kid is amazing. But this, getting back to what you were talking about, I mean, it's an honor to be on your show.
Hey, man, it's an honor to have you. You know, I tell people about the first time, and I said this when we had you on the show before. I remember driving across campus, and maybe it was either my freshman or sophomore year, and you were on your way to an interview somewhere. I was driving by East Quad, and I just remember you coming out, knocking on the window, and saying, "Hey, man, I gotta get to this interview. Take me over." I don't know if it was over to the Union, over to some place on campus you had to be. Mm-hmm. And, man, I didn't know you from Adam on the street, but I was like, man, I'm going to take this dude. This dude is about his business. I'm going to take him to wherever it was you had to go. And, you know, weeks later, I saw you in a hot tub interviewing Marcus Ray. And then years later, I saw you. It's like, man, that dude, that same guy walking across campus, look at him now doing big things down there in D.C.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of University of Michigan. I mean, you have so much opportunity to do well. You just, you know, apply yourself. And shout out to Marcus Ray. I needed to do something to grab people's attention. And it was an honor to get in that hot tub and do an interview with him. I know it looked nuts, but it grabbed people's attention, particularly in Detroit and around the country. People who read the Michigan Daily, like, that's Marcus Ray, Charles Woodson's, you know, roommate in a hot tub doing an interview about the Wolverines, you know, 1998 national champion. So that was wild, wasn't it? I still have it framed in my
house. Yeah, it was wild.
I'm like, man, what's this about? I'm like, it's a long story. Just listen to Michigan Insider. They talk about it all the time.
Right. Yeah, man. You know, it's awesome to see. It's awesome to see, you know, what you're doing. And as I said, the perspective that you can offer us and offer the listeners this morning on what is going on the ground. Before we get to talking about the nationwide protests and the coverage that you've offered and you're offering down there in D.C., you know, you cannot avoid the looming specter of the coronavirus and how people are putting themselves at personal risk to protest, because this is a time where, you know, across the country, you're sheltering in place, or over 100,000 Americans have died as a result. And I know, and I remember seeing on social media, you posting about how the coronavirus really obviously severely impacted your family.
Yes, definitely. My grandmother, Lily Person, died from the coronavirus right outside Detroit. My uncle, Tommy Gantt, died. Yeah, it's been a really tough time. The past 2020 is just an unbelievable year, you know. You know, you got the coronavirus, and now you have these protests. And, you know, in terms of social distancing, right now that's how people aren't social distancing. Let's just be honest, because they are filled with anger and, you know, disappointment, what they describe with the judicial system. And they're saying, look, George Floyd didn't have an opportunity to social distance right now because, you know, he's dead. I don't care about that. They want to make change, and they're making sure that their voices are being heard, not just here in our nation's capital, but around the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important, I think, important point to make that, you know, George Floyd, the protest, what happened to him, you know, the treatment that resulted in his death was the fuse. It turns out that the more people that you get on camera that are protesting, that are talking about this, they're protesting disproportionate treatment, and that being the most severe form, the killing of another unarmed black man, but at the same time, disproportionate treatment, and you could be talking about the number of stops, the number of arrests, the disproportionate punishment. You know, all of these issues are rising from this, and we see effects in other aspects of society. Getting back to the coronavirus really quickly, Shamari, I mean, that this is another example where we see the impact be more severe for African Americans due to some other factors, some other societal factors, you know, harder to social distance, more that when you talk about the lines of work where, you know, being on the front lines as far as some of the profession that a lot of African Americans take up, it is affecting the community more severely than any other community out there.
A lot, yes, it is. And, some of that has to do with health care. It has to deal with, and this is my opinion, with, a lack of grocery stores and resources. Mm-hmm. Also, taking good care of yourself as well with your health. And there's a combination of factors that this goes into. Coronavirus is serious. And, you know, it hasn't been easy the last 2 months reporting on the coronavirus, because, you know, I'm still going out in the field, and, you know, NBC does a real good job to make sure that we're safe. But at the same time, I want to be able to bring people the story, let them know what's going on. And it's nice that my work here in DC is picked up around the country, and on Twitter at Shamari Stone and on Facebook at Shamari Stone NBC, so that people can see what's going on. And, legislation and laws made here in Congress, here in our nation's capital. And so we have that. And then George Floyd, that death. And just to let you know, the police chief here in D.C., his name is Peter Newsom, basically said, and I'm paraphrasing it, what you saw on that video was nothing short of murder. That's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
That it is murder. And people question why it took so long to arrest the suspect, Derek Chauffin, and they're wondering why the other three officers shown on that video have also not been arrested. But I do want to want people to understand that this is not just about George Floyd. It's about what they describe as implicit bias, systemic racism. It's about when you graduate from a nice school, you're a good law-abiding citizen, and you're stopped by an officer because you're in a nice car or you fit a specific profile. It's about when you have a young black kid who goes into a store and he's a good kid, he's working hard, and he's stopped by security, profiled for being accused of being a shoplifter, when in all honesty, he's not. It's about these host of issues. So when you have all this boiling up, and then you see that officer, they say, look at that camera on that video, and had his knee on George Floyd for approximately 9 minutes. That was the straw that broke the camel's back, and people are saying enough is enough. But it's also worth mentioning that there's not just African-American protesters out here. There are so many white people, Asians, who understand, you know, what they say is African-Americans, how they're feeling right now with this. And to be honest with you, they're just as outraged as the Black Lives Matter protesters. And it's not just all politics, because some of my conservative friends, Republican friends, they're just as outraged. I have three police officers who are my friends who, you know, won't talk publicly about it. But they said, Shamari, that is murder. But in all fairness, you're innocent until proven guilty. And that is our judicial system, whether you like it or not. That is the system. But when you talk about that system, from the protester's standpoint, they say that, yes, the officers in some of these cases will be arrested, they'll be indicted, and then they'll be found not guilty. And they say it's a cycle that they're continuously seeing when it comes to situations like what happened to Philando Castile. And then they're also mentioning about Breonna Taylor in her home, EMT, and she was shot and killed. And that investigation is ongoing as well.
Yeah, I've talked about those kids, certainly the Philando Castile case, because it too occurred in Minnesota, and you had, you know, a cop fire into a car with his family in the car. It's like, you know, you see cases like that, and you wonder what will be the turning point. And I wonder if this is it, Shamari, because you mentioned the police chief down there calling it murder. We have seen police officers be willing across the country to speak out against this case, to speak out against the disproportionate treatment more broadly, and to really take a stand with the protesters. That strikes me as different, and I wonder if that's something that you've noticed in your coverage.
I have noticed that, and like I said, you know, some police officers will pull me aside, and it's really interesting hearing their perspective. Now, if I told you about the protesters, now I'm going to talk about the law enforcement perspective. A lot of cops told me, one cop told me, quote, Shamari, bad cops make good cops like me look bad. And the argument from some protesters is that the good cops, they say, aren't speaking up, and that there's like a blue line of silence, that they don't speak up about what they see from the, you know, these alleged incidents. But what you're seeing is that people are coming forward in terms of law enforcement, and this is different police chiefs around the country saying that what you saw on that tape is murder, and that's their viewpoint. Also, with the different autopsy reports, another autopsy came out, and you know, you all can look into that as well. Yesterday was pretty interesting. You had the protesters by Lafayette Square Park. Keep in mind, here in D.C., there's a curfew at 7 o'clock, and the protesters were out by Lafayette Park, and the president wanted to walk across Lafayette Park to go to the St. John's Church, which was founded in around 1816, and that church was, quote-unquote, the president's church. Different presidents will go to church there. It's near the White House. And I'm not going to say the protesters, someone, you know, because you don't know unless there's proof, lit it on fire, the nursery, and there was $25,000 worth of damage. And the president went over there, and he was holding a Bible. The military police, U.S. Park Police, moved the protesters away from there. At the time, they didn't understand why, what's going on, why are they moving? And they used, you know, the incendiary devices, tear gas, pepper spray, OC spray, whatever you want to call it, and that moved people back. And then, you know, there were arrests yesterday after 7 o'clock for people who were violating the curfew, which was set at 7 o'clock by D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser.
Yeah, you and we're talking to Shamari Stone this morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. NBC DC reporter, News 4, down there in DC, a Michigan alum, our guy. And, you know, watching you, you know, I follow you on Twitter. So I saw your video, Shamari, and you're down there. You're down there with the, with the gas mask on. And, you know, I can only imagine what it's like to be in the middle of, but I was scared for you, man, watching you on the video, because I mean, you know, at times you're between the protesters and the police. And then there was one, there was some footage of the police kind of advancing on foot, like a quick advance into the crowd, and they started pushing them back, pushing the crowd back. And then there was the mounted police that started walking them back. Take us in that moment about how you were feeling at that time and what the protesters were saying and thinking at that time.
Well, me in covering the story, let's first explain. I have my gas mask, I have my protective gear, and I keep milk with me so that if I do get sprayed in the face with tear gas, you pour milk into your eyes and that takes away that burning sensation that you're currently feeling, much better than water. The protesters, many of them anticipate that this is going to happen, and they, in their eyes, this, they say that this is an act of civil disobedience. And they believe that protests like this, whether you agree or not, do bring attention. They raise awareness. And they're saying that if there had not been, and this is their view, have not been protests like you saw in Minneapolis, that Derek Chauvin would not have been arrested, or it would have taken much longer for him to be arrested. And their argument is that, why did it take so long? When you see the police advancing, the military police, they are pushing people back. You got to keep in mind, you have Lafayette Square Park, and that's near the White House. So, like, 4 days ago, you could walk closer up to the gate. Then you're moved back to the street, which is, you know, a street, and that's where the gate is located now. The protests, from what I'm told, protesters say they're going to continue again because they want all three officers charged and they want to bring attention to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what was the tenor, if you will, of the that particular protest at that time? Was it was it aggressive? Was anyone throwing things? What was the temperament? Was it more peaceful? How would you describe the tenor of that particular protest crowd?
Well, first of all, that's a good, very good question. You can't stereotype all the protesters because you have different groups. You have Howard University students. You have peaceful protesters who are singing "We Shall Overcome," and you may have a couple of some protesters who are a little more violent. You can't just say all protesters are the same. All of them are looters. That's ridiculous. So you had some people who were throwing bottles and bricks at times. I'm not saying that happened yesterday, but I am documenting what happened 2 days ago. And they were, you know, throwing things at the officers and the U.S. Park Police. And but you had others who did not have anything in their hands with their hands up. And that's one of their gripes, is that, hey, I have my hands up, so why are you arresting me, or why are you pushing me back? So that's what the current state right now is here in our nation's capital.
Yeah, I'm curious if you've, because I've had people ask me this question, is if I, you know, look, first of all, I think that protesters aren't a monolith, and certainly Black people aren't a monolith, so it's not like you can speak for every Black person or every protester, but I'm curious what you think will be the turning point, if you will, for the protest. When will the protesting begin to subside? Because I tell you what, you know, in my opinion, some of the things that we've seen here over the last couple of days, make me think that the protesting will endure and maybe pick up in intensity, like one of the things that you mentioned, you know, the autopsy report that came out yesterday by with, you know, many people know the name Michael Bodden from the HBO series that he had, but also University of Michigan Medical School's Director of Autopsy and Forensic Services, Dr. Alicia Wilson, was also involved in that autopsy that found that, hey, that, you know, asphyxia was the cause of death. And so when I see something like that, when it's totally counter what the county attorney said in the, you know, in the charging document, you know, that's the kind of thing that people are protesting. And it makes me think
exactly.
That, you know, this is not about the, this is not about to stop tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a, you know, it's rather ironic. That's a very good point you just made. And that's a point that some protesters talked to me yesterday about. See, that's an example of exactly why they say we're protesting. How do you have two different, you know, vastly different conclusions from an autopsy report? And it's also worth mentioning that, you know, today we have a 7 p.m. curfew here in D.C. And, you know, I come into work at 3 o'clock, head right down to the White House, and we'll have to see what happens then. But what's interesting, before the mounted units were pushed, you know, pushed people back, U.S. Attorney General William Barr actually came out of the White House, talked to some people near in Lafayette Square Park, went back, and then that's when the mounted units pushed people back, the military, police, and then the president walked across, President Trump walked across to St. John's Church.
Yeah, you know, I think that as we, you know, as we move forward, as we hear more reaction from, you know, from police departments across the country, I just feel like, and I said this earlier, in our exchange here, Shamari, I feel like, you know, while we might be looking to government officials ordinarily to set the tone, I actually think that the cues are going to come from police. And I think some of the pictures, some of the video that you've captured, some of the video that we've captured across the country. I'm sure you've seen the video here in the state of Michigan, where up in Flint,
absolutely,
up in my hometown, you know, the sheriff, he gets in the protest. I think the more examples you have like that, I think ultimately that's going to be the kind of the unifying tone setter. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I think your viewpoint is accurate. I do think that as more law enforcement officers and departments across the country come out and speak about this, that you could see the change that people are looking for. But you mean it's a process. It's not just it doesn't just start with police officers. You have, you know, the state attorneys in different areas of the country, and you know, it takes, you know, people coming together to try and sit down and figure out what can be done. Because in all fairness, I mean, you have the protesters, but you also have police officers who are fighting crime, who do wake up every day, put on that uniform, and their job is to protect and serve. And some of them do a really good job at that, and just to keep the peace in our society. And again, in the officers I've talked to, they're not like that. They say, you know, we if we see something like that, we immediately tell our supervisor. And they're about serving, and they signed up as police officers to do the right thing. And their concern is that incidents like what you saw in Minneapolis paint all people, all cops around the country as bad cops. And that's just not the case, they say.
Right. And that's why I say, you know, images like the one you captured of the two cops, you have an image on your Twitter feed where there are two cops helping an elderly black woman, and there were some, you know, it sounds like there were some people around, some protesters that didn't want you to tweet that photo. And you said, no, it's my responsibility, my duty to tweet that photo. And I was like, man, exactly. And that is, you know, I think it's important to really show those images, because, again, that is, first of all, it's your job to show all aspects of the story. Mm-hmm. But if your goal is change, then you need to show some of the vehicles for that change actually exhibiting the kind of behavior that you want to see.
Yeah, I think the lines are blurred now more than ever, and this is my opinion, for reporters, because I think people get confused that, number one, I'm not an activist. Number two, I'm not a commentator. Number three, I'm not a pundit. I'm a reporter. I'm an objective journalist, and I'm capturing these historical moments and sharing the truth that I am seeing on the front lines and in talking to my law enforcement sources and the protesters. And it really makes me feel good when you have level-minded, intelligent protesters who come up to me and they're like, yo, you do a really good job. You know, you're fair. And then police officers come up to me and say, you know, you do a good job. You're fair. And that's all, at the end of the day, that's all I want. When I go home to my wife and kids, I can look in the mirror and say, this is what you signed up for. This is what you grinded and worked and hustled and sacrificed at Michigan and worked three jobs, you know, just to be able to have this profession. And I thank God for the University of Michigan and the Communication Studies Department, the Michigan Daily. I'm forever grateful to Charles Woodson and to Honey Jones and Marcus Ray, who, you know, believed in me and said they saw something in me. And I'm not saying that to be arrogant. That's not me. But it's nice when you have people who come together and see that passion and that desire. And, you know, Charles often reaches out to me, you know, and says, keep up the good work. And that just makes me feel real good because he also worked hard. And then I explained to my son, you know, who would love to be a Wolverine one day. He continues to work hard. And I explained to him, you know, there are some people who, when they see you with your hair, they see your skin, they may not judge you by the content of your character. They don't know you have a 3.8 GPA. They don't know that you got baptized last year and you have a strong faith in God. They look at you, some people do, and they are scared. And that's just something, the reality that he has to deal with. So when you have your children and they're watching this unfold on television, you know, they weren't here for Rodney King. So they don't know about what happened back then. And you're just trying to educate and explain to them what the deal is. And at the same time, you don't, and this is just me as a father, you don't want to say, yeah, this is how all cops are. See, this is what they do. Well, what is that going to accomplish? Absolutely nothing, because it's not true.
Talking to Shamari Stone this morning, NBC DC reporter at News 4, mentioned a proud Michigan alum, Emmy Award winner, and on the ground down there in DC covering the protests. And just you personally, man, I'm scared for you. I mean, how do you, as you're out there covering this, is fear ever part of the equation for you?
Well, in the morning, you know, I pray with my wife and I pray when I'm out there. And, you know, I'll do hits for the local station here. And then sometimes I'll do live hits for the world on MSNBC. Your adrenaline is pumping. And you're saying to yourself, and my family understands, this is what I signed up for. This is a profession. I mean, if I don't want to cover protests, and in my opinion, I should go work at a hardware store or dig ditches. Right now, this is what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the job. And you have to do it fairly,
right,
objectively, without any liberal or conservative bias as an objective reporter. And you know, I'll take the heat. I'll take the heat from a protester who says, don't show that photo of those officers helping that person. That's propaganda. And when you explain, look, I'm doing my job, you know, they have nothing to say. So that's my profession. And to answer your question, yes, sometimes you do have fear. But then you realize that you do what you're trained to, social distance, to move back. And at the same time, you have your photographer who's capturing this compelling video, capturing these historic moments at the same time. And then when you feel safe, you then move forward, because it's my job to shine a mirror and show you what's happening.
Do you have a sense for how much of the protests, at least the ones that you've covered, have been, you know, infiltrated, for lack of a better term, by people whose purpose for being out there is not the protest? Maybe it's maybe it's an avenue for them to forward unrest for their own ends. Have you noticed any of that? Have you been able to pick up on any of that in your coverage of the protests?
I haven't been able to confirm or if somebody is with Antifa or if you're a regular protester. It's hard to differentiate because no one's revealing that to me.
Yeah, man, it's keep doing what you do. I'm so unbelievably proud of just your accomplishments in general, but heightened when I see you out there on the ground covering this story. As I said, if you don't follow Shamari on Twitter, at Shamari Stone, you need to be. He is down there in the thick, gas mask and all, catching tear gas at times when you have the gas mask off, because you got to pull the gas mask up to be able to talk into the mic.
Exactly. If there's anybody, any engineers out there, if you can create a gas mask in which, like, we could talk, that would be awesome. But yeah, you got to lift it up, and that's the problem. When you have the OC spray in the air, it's then seeping in, and that's why you carry your milk with you to wash your face out, wash your eyes out.
All right, so Shamari, I'm going to take you away for a moment before we go. Take you away, from this protest coverage, and take you back to your sports roots. And I need you to give me a couple of scouting reports. Give me a scouting report on what you've seen from Quentin, and what Michigan fans should expect from Quentin. And then give us a scouting report on your son, man, on his game, on his accomplishments on the field, his position. Just break it all down for us.
Well, first of all, I'm a huge Quentin Johnson fan because I've seen him play, and I know what he's capable of doing, and he's an incredible athlete. But more importantly, he's a great person as well, and he's passionate. He has that. I've seen him run, and it just blows my mind. You know, I'm going to be honest, as a Michigan fan, it is awful for me when I see what's happening with Ohio State, and I just hope that we can click and win and continue to grow. In my opinion, I think Harbaugh has done a good job. People look at me and they say, really? I said, yeah, because I feel, in my opinion, that he's brought stability to the program. Now, that's what I believe. And, we had Rich Rod, we had Hokey, I remember Lloyd Carr, and I feel that Harbaugh is bringing stability to the program, and it takes time to build. You just can't build a program overnight, and I think, you know, I feel that he's doing a good job, and there will come a day soon that we will continue to bring it back to Michigan football and dominate. That's just my opinion. As far as my son, you know, I'm proud of him going to St. John's College High School, where they have exceptional athletes and also good character, good kids who come out of there. And he's a defensive back going into his junior year. I love that he works hard and has a 3.8 GPA. He just finished, and his goal is just to work hard. And, he'd love to play Michigan football one day. But, again, this is his journey. So wherever he wants to go, I will support his decision, because ultimately this is his life.
Absolutely. Well, I want to pass along a message from one of our Twitter followers, Theus313. He said your guest Shamari has that All-State voice. So his suggestion is, if when you decide to hang up, reporting, go apply for Dennis Haysbert's job as the All-State pitch man, because you could do that job too.
Repeat that question. Go right ahead.
I said, I'm sorry if we broke up a little bit. I said one of our Twitter followers and listeners tweeted in. He said, your guest Shamari has that all-state voice. So his suggestion is that if you decide to hang him up, you know, from the reporting beat, go ahead and apply for Dennis Haysbert's job with Allstate as their pitch man, because you could do that job too.
Oh, that would be great. But, man, I stick to news. I stick to what I know. I mean, sports, that is a different ball game. You know what I mean? It's, I know a little bit. My son and Quentin and some of the other guys tell me about offensive and defensive schemes, and I'm still trying to understand everything myself. You know what gets on my nerves? When you have somebody who is in news or someone who pretends that they know everything about sports, I'm not that guy. I'd be like, hey, what defense are they running here? Can you explain this to me? I said, you know what, let me just listen to Sam on Michigan Insider. He'll break it down for me, so I'll listen to you, and and you'll break it down so well. I mean, that's why I listen to you guys. I love your podcast, too. Go Blue.
Yeah, well, hey, man, we love you, too. Stay safe down there. Follow Shamari Stone on Twitter at Shamari, S-H-O-M-A-R-I, at Shamari Stone. Yeah. Follow him on Twitter, and you will get some amazing coverage of what's going on the ground in these protests. Just stay safe, man. I mean, stay safe in the protests and stay safe out here with the coronavirus going around. Like you said, I know you're masked up, but you're putting yourself in harm's way on a couple of different levels, and appreciate your willingness to do that, but just want you to stay safe out there.
I appreciate it, and I will stay safe. And more importantly, thank you for having me on your program. And to all the Wolverines listening to this, I love you guys. We're in this together in terms of our football team and the culture at Michigan, and you know, we're going to be on top, but we all got to stick together, and let's play some football. We need football back. That's my release. I got to see our Wolverines, you know what I mean?
Right. I hear you, man. All right, Shamari. Keep up the good work, man. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again.
Appreciate you, guys.
God bless.
Peace.
Yeah, that was great to catch up with Shamari Stone. And like I said, you know, there are moments that stick with you, and you know, driving around campus, and this dude, he just came up to the window. It was like, boom, 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 knocking on his, hey, man, hey, can you take me over to somewhere on campus? It's like, sure, man, hop in. And that was this guy. And look at him now. Tremendous, tremendous work Shamari is doing. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here of the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the Ticket.